Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I'm your hostess, Natalie Ross, and we welcome back to the show for this week's guest is Grandmother Karina Sarinen of the Turquoise Heart. And Grandmother has been on the show four times before in episodes 14, 24, 44, 45, and now she will be here for episode 99. So we welcome her back to the show. And just a quick note, a quick warning to those whom this may be pertinent or important information. We do talk about sex and rape in this show, so make the best decision as whether it's appropriate for you and or anyone around you to listen to at this time. And other than that, enjoy the show. Welcome back to the show, Grandmother Karina. I am so happy to have you back again. Welcome.
And thank you so much. Gitos, gracias, merci beaucoup, in all the cultures.
So before we begin, would you like to lead us and our listeners on an invocation?
Let's take a deep breath, beloved listeners. Let's just breathe in and just use the body as a gauge as to how deep is your breath going on the exhale. Where are you resting in your body? And just allow yourself on the inhale to realize that this is inspiration, inspiring. And really bring it strongly into your third eye. Hold it to the count of three. One, two, three. And now let that breath drip like a shower all the way down the front body, down into the perineum, the huiyin between the genitals and the anus, and feel yourself cupped in a bowl of blessed water, the bowl of the universal and ancient mother. Now let's just add a component to that, since this is the resurrection of the goddess. I, who come from Mongolia in my genetic Seringal, the moon goddess, going to call in the Egyptian goddess Ma'at, truth. And just imagine that you have a white feather dangling from your beautiful little nose. Just tell yourself that you have a cute little nose. And just watch the breath rising and falling, including from your heart chakra to the feather of truth. As we devote ourselves to the sacred laws today, we are as above, so below, deep within, and all around. As we dedicate this teaching today and this engagement, this encounter to the way of beauty, the way of freedom, and the way of realizing that we're all being dreamed, and are we finally awakened? May we be enlightened through this protocol. May all our teachers and our lineage holders, the treasure keepers, and the guardians of all directions stand on guard for us and keep us impeccable and in integrity. Om Atak. Om Atakuyas. Yay.
Thank you, Grandma. So, something that you do, I'm laughing because it's not just something that you do, it's like everything that you do is the sacred womb work, and this is tied into the sacred wound and honoring sacred women. For someone who's maybe never considered the womb wound, can you open that door for us and share what that is for these listeners?
For sure. I'm going to start with my own indigenous training. I was in the 90s married to my second partner, who's a life partner for building community and a bodhisattva or a volunteer. And one of the indicators that I really wanted to explore what life would be like with him was that he did dishes on a four-day retreat called Beyond Gender and for 150 people. And I saw him in that kitchen in the retreat center with his elbows in natural soap, just being willing to clean a lot of dishes. And one of the womb wounds that women carry is that they don't look for that in a man. the womb wounds are genetically echoed and they modify us. And we become copacetic or synchronized to the echo of the wound of our mothers, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers, our great-great-grandmothers in the mother's line. But more importantly, in the last 150 to 200 years, women have taken on the image that has been projected on the screen by white Russians and patriarchals through movies. Women have been devastated because we've taken on something and not become independent. We've taken on something that is a protocol, say, in order to belong and look like this, you must do this. And I call it the prostitution of the soul. It's the unwilding and the domestication of the spirit that can be free. So in the 90s, I was already having some very profound awarenesses and not fully awakened to sexual energy. My first husband and I of 19 years separated, and I went to a guy in leadership training, and David Gershon, the facilitator, was really who I was tracking. I was at the end of a career of 14 years as a guidance counselor. I had provided service in secondary schools in the fourth largest board in Ontario, Canada. I'd provided leadership and staff development, 10 years committed to parent education, done marriage encounter work, really looked at sacred partnership, evolved and developed the first ever parent education conference in Ottawa, which was an amalgam, a beautiful composition by social workers and agencies, including hospitals and parents who were committed to the fact that we do mechanical upgrades on cars, but we do nothing for relationship. We have to get driver's licenses and have to be a certain age in order to drive and drink, but we do nothing about what does it take to be responsible and accountable for being a parent. So that was my first life. My second life was dedicated to making sure that we didn't lose kids who were falling between the cracks of parents who didn't get on the same page. So it was a very personal time for me. David astoundingly recognized me as a little grandmother.
Is David the man who was doing dishes?
No, that was my second partner, Paul.
Oh, okay.
David Gershon is he is a runner. He carried a torch around the planet to bring the world together through fire. And he was giving a teaching called Fire in the Soul. And that teaching was it helped me to break through the crust and the veil of my own delusions. I had been working all those years in my first marriage in order to belong, and I had already turned so many corners, I couldn't go back. And I realized it wasn't me who was ending the relationship. It was my husband unwilling to work a horizontal path of all women are sacred, all children are sacred, the earth is sacred, all men were at some point sacred children. And that law had not emerged yet, but I was living something and my pot was stirred. And yeah, if you look at a cat, you know, when a cat gets like threatened, the hackles come up. Mm-hmm. And I could feel my hackles coming up. And I didn't want to fight. My strategy, and beloved listeners, I want you to request of Natalie and or cuttingatruth@hotmail.com a beautiful piece that Laura Awawa and I did at the Center of Peace in Vancouver called Second Trimester Sacred Wounds. And it's these three strategies. When your hackles get up, you either freeze or you fight. You know, you want to tear the eyeballs out of whoever's threatening, and or you fly. And I feel like my personal experience in my years on the planet is that I'm really proficient at all of them. I feel like I've been predatored and I've frozen. And then as I've done my yoga work and my Vipassana work and my Tibetan Buddhist core work and a little bit of Pilates, I've really built my own inner fire. And David Gershon really stoked the fire for the 22 of us on that retreat at Imbolc in 1991. And I realized that once my fire got stoked, my roots, my second chakra, my third chakra, the fire lit in my heart, and I loved myself so much that I couldn't deny that I needed to be with love. Mm-hmm. I needed to have a mirror as a sacred womb min. I needed to have a mirror and an acknowledgement that I am love. I am the essence of love. And I wasn't getting that. So my fire wasn't being fed. I had to feed my own fire, even though we'd gone through high initiations with Don Taylor Colson in Baca, Colorado. And so listeners, I want you to just really settle into your timeline. I want you to look, no matter how old you are chronologically, in your timelines, you have these transformative turning points, these moments where you look over your shoulder and say, who made that decision? You know, and it's not personal. It's not you. You didn't make that decision. You are living an echo, whether it's from a movie, from a patriarchal stance, or an image on a bus stop where they're selling sex, or it's your mother telling you not, or the Catholic Church, or whatever it is, it's not personal. Those turning points are opportunities to wake up and realize that you are the dreamer. And, you know, I always cry when I hear this. I cried on Sunday when I went to what I call my Sunday church with Astrid here at Neo Alpine Yoga, in hot yoga. During Savasana, she played Imagine. You know, I always cry when that comes up. I cry because I am one of those ones. And listeners, I want you to know that Natalie and I are those ones. We are dreaming a new world. We're dreaming from a new earth paradigm as co-creatives, that we are one with the water, the air, the fire, the earth. We are one with the plant medicines. We're one with the NEPs and the lodges, the circles and the councils. We're coming into oneness. And this transmission today is to just hold you in that place that you may need to recuperate at the wound level from some real damage. How does that sit with you, Natalie?
Good. And I think the question coming up is this damage. You know, I've heard you say before that every wound is a womb wound. And if I didn't say that right, let me know. But
That's it.
Every wound is a womb wound. And I just think it's so interesting because everyone comes out of a womb. It doesn't matter what they look like, what gender they are, what color they are, how tall or short or big or fat or skinny or happy or sad or successful or failure they're going to be in life, and all those things that we can judge and name and da 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 da. It doesn't matter. Everyone comes from a womb. Mm-hmm. And the idea that wounding is passed down through the womb. And so before you're even birthed, you've already sort of taken on and attuned to these wounds, I think is a really powerful concept. And the healing of it brings up questions of, you know, because I think some people might hear womb wound and think, oh, that's just for women to deal with. But I think it's for everyone, right? I think that's why I'm bringing this up, is because it's for everybody. Yeah. And it doesn't matter who you are or how you identify yourself. You came from a womb. And if you have a womb, then you have that power to transmit this onwards. So where do we go from here? You know, if we recognize, I really am carrying the wounds of my mother's lineage. Is there hope? What do you do about it?
This is really important for you to say, is there hope? First and foremost, is there hope? And then second, what do you do about it? Or what do we as a collective do about it?
Both.
So it's both and, you know. Yeah. So first and foremost, I would say that if we as those who are acknowledging we have no more denial, you know, that we have fallen into codependent patterns or addictive patterns, or we are lost souls, or it's some people that I see when I look at them, they're in trances or zombie zones. And I would say I'm finding more of them in the walkabout on the planet than I've ever seen before. And I've had this conversation here with young people because of technology, because of television, because of Netflix, because of cell phones, because of the tendency to be hypervigilant, is because of the nervous system having to run all of this energy through our bodies, and it's not natural. It's not wild. It's not grounded in pine trees on the beaches of Carolina. It's not grounded in the forests of Whistler Blackcomb here in British Columbia in the Sea to Sky Corridor. It's not grounded in Pachamama. The nervous system has taken on an artificial intelligence, and people don't know how to respond. They're in reaction. So first and foremost, is there hope? Yes. If you're listening to this broadcast, yes. If you're tuning into the new moon and the full moon and the return to the 13 moon teachings, yes. If you're sitting in council, circle, and lodge, whether it's Ojai Foundation, bless their souls that they're recovering from the fire, or it's a circle or a council in Ipis and sweat lodges, yes. If you're honestly admitting that you've participated in a white, patriarchal, privileged, elite, male-dominated culture called education, medicine, economy, politics, you name it, then yes, there's hope. Because first you must confess and admit you got caught. Where did you get caught? Your mother made those choices. And you chose that mother. So I just want you to breathe into that. And this is a place, I was quoting Wayne Dyer in our newsletter message 2 days ago, and it was like, Wayne Dyer wrote a book called All Life is Nine Intentions. Then he wrote another book, Live Life Without Excuses. I like those titles. I mean, I don't need to read the books. I did see his PBS broadcast on the Nine Intentions, and his daughter was co-facilitating. Can you imagine the gift of a father to a daughter who says to his daughter, live life by intention? That's the what if, yeah?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like the kind of opposite of the patriarchy.
Totally. Live life. You belong to my family, and I'll give you an allowance if you do this way. And I'm going to be like a sergeant general major and take you through my military training, and you've got to do it this way, you know. And then women take it on. Let's not exempt ourselves. This is right. No excuses here.
We take it on because of we want to be safe and belong and survive, and that's what we think we have to do. And sometimes it is what people had to do, and we're waking up and learning that actually there's other options, and we have the power to make those other choices.
Exactly. And that's why you're dedicating your broadcast to dream about the possibility of being free to return to natural beauty. And beauty is wild. Yeah. So I want to just speak about there are other options. So I come from a lineage. I want to do a little bit of my October Me Too story, which I did not, by the way, enter into on telecommunications. I didn't go into that at all. It actually surprised me when it came up on my personal screen. It was like, I didn't know that was going on. I am just so not into that.
You mean you didn't see the Me Too trend in the news and in the, you know, you weren't like tuning in, but then you did pop into Facebook and had this reflection show up.
And then it came into our meetings with co-create avatars with October, November, December. So I just want to speak about my Me Too, but from a place where I'm a co-creator. I want to unshroud the crucified mother. Shall we do that?
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, just get into the vibration of that. So the reality is, in my mother's lineage as a bloodline shaman, my path was to track my mother line and to ask myself through my second husband's and my work at building community and sweat lodges and having a teepee and moon councils and men's circles and couples work called Noble Adventure. All of that work had been seeded in my first marriage. The second marriage was not just to go somewhere else and take somebody else's course, but to host our own teachings and bring people to us so that our children would have a leg up and move beyond the definition of I am a child of a divorce. You know, I'm a child of a dad that wasn't as strong as my mom. You know, that divisive conversation. So Paul and I had intentional relationship. During that time, we partnered in a sweat lodge. So women came and built me a sweat lodge, thanks to Eugene from Rosebud Reservation in the Lakota Territory, North Dakota. And So we built, it was, you know, like a crooked little house. It was really quite crooked. But 14 women, we were ecstatic that we received the transmission and we built this crazy sweat lodge. And during that time, Eugene was tuning in to us, transmitting through Anna, the way to build a sweat lodge. So it's a very traditional way. We can't do that anymore because we have so much interruption and interference from satellites. It's very hard, unless you're listening to Dave Swallow and his wife singing Lakota sweat lodge songs or singing the traditional drum songs, and you've got a CD, only then in the Lakota language can you get the transmission, because it's not being transmitted through English. It's being transmitted through vibration and resonance and frequency of our mother tongues. So that's what happened to me. When I was in that sweat lodge and started chiefing, I started languaging, and I didn't know what language it was. And then I started journeying, because as a chief, I'm responsible for what? Four layers above to the fifth, which is the star realm. Four layers below to the fifth, which is the core of the earth realm. Above, below, within, without. The within is in that sweat lodge. So through accepting my seat of chief, my seat of sovereignty, I open myself to being an instrument, not an object of adulation, not someone who needs Botox or cosmetic surgery. I had already stripped my house. I had already given away everything that was chemical. I married a man in my second marriage who had been 10 years organic vegetarian. I went through death because he purified me. And plus, he was a great lover who taught me that a man who sucks a woman's toes can give a woman orgasm. Wow. Very novel thought. So I was receiving this shameless teaching, both in the bed and in the sweat lodge. And I want women to get that. You can't come to shamelessness in the bed alone. You must do the work. You must do the shamanic teaching, the shamanic journey, the vision questing. You must learn how to work with a wheel. I can't. You know, the reality is I've had psychotherapists and psychoanalysts come to me last year at Danza de Luna in Costa Rica, and they said to me, Grandmother, Srimati, you need to write a book about this teaching of sacred womb, sacred wound, sacred clearing. And I was very, you know, my ego was kind of stroked, and it was like, yeah, Srimati, let's write the book. The deeper I got into doing the work, the more I realized you can't write a book about it. It's impossible. You have to do the work. You have to create a sanctuary and take refuge and invite women to come on retreat, as we've already done and we're doing in Costa Rica the 24th to the 30th of March. You have to create a safe space where women can go through this pain. And it's not personal. It's my mother's pain. It's my grandmother's pain. So my mumu, who is a Same reindeer woman, and I loved her deeply. She didn't have dog teeth. And so I loved her very deeply. She had, when she was doing laundry one day, when she was chopping wood one day in Sault Ste. Marie in the backyard, the top of the axe, the blade fell off the wood. And it hit her in the top of the head. Wow. And she was never the same. My grandfather refused to take her to a hospital. And the first four of their five children, they were all born on the kitchen table with midwives in Fintown. That's just the way the old ones are, you know. My auntie, who's my age, was the only one born in a hospital. I was the first grandchild of both sets of grandparents to be born in a hospital. Talk about breaking a cycle. Talk about ending the silence. You know, so we created this opportunity in my lineage of the Huki lineage for me to pick up the bloodline teaching as a Golden Reindeer Moon Lodge teacher. And it came through my grandmother's lineage, and I think I absorbed it just by watching her. You know, with her hair, there's 4'9" and hair down to her butt, and watching her youngest daughter, my auntie, braid her hair and wrap it on coils around the top of her head, and just having an apron and making bulla and finished coffee bread and making pizza, and but always with this, because of the axe in the brain, always with this somatic ability to not be fully here.
So she was kind of a little checked out.
She was checked out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to ask.
She was also checked into something.
She was checked into another realm, yeah? Mm-hmm. So it's like fight, flight, or freeze. So on some level, she had been frozen. she realized she couldn't fly away because in those days we didn't have women's support groups and women's safe homes and all of that. And my grandfather had put a chastity belt on her when right after the fifth child was born.
Wait, because he what?
Was, yeah, yeah.
Like a literal one?
Literal. Got a big corset and put a lock on it so that when he went to work at the Crone, he was heavy metal toxic. So he was going through his grief and traumatized by the Finno-Russian War, which he experienced as a child. I just want you to check. I want you and your listeners to do a checklist. What kind of PTSD or trauma does your lineage contain?
Yeah.
Where is it going to come up? It's going to come up through the pelvis of women. It's going to come up through the spermatozoa of the men who penetrate those wombs and fertilize that egg. In that moment, you have a conception with the possibility of all of life, the possibility of the absolutely horrendous things that tribes can do, Rwanda, tribes where they massacred each other and their blood ran through three rivers and a lake, and there's a chapel full of the bones of those who are dead. Or you can come up and be birthed in the royal family, for God's sakes, and your name is Princess Charlotte, and, you know, look at how you're dressed, and look at who your mother and father are. So the reality is you choose that conception point from another dimension.
I just want to say here, too, that you don't mean to say that royalty is better than the other one. It was just an example of the different possibilities.
It's an example of different possibilities, and too many people worship something. They put somebody on a pedestal. They put this person is a great producer, director, and I want to get into film. So how am I going to get into film? Now, take a look. What did Jane Mansfield do? What did Marilyn Monroe do? Take a look at who came out of the 40s and 50s in movies. Who came out of that? Who is it? Who's Selznick? You know, take a look at who is producing the movies out of Hollywood. How are we ever going to cure ourselves of the predisposition to admire somebody on the screen and admire a movie more than creating our own movie and be the director of our own movie? You know, the royalties, same thing. We're worshiping that. Why? What is that? The House of Hanover. What is that? House of Hanover. They're ordinary people that grew up in the Black Forest in Austria. What made them royalty? Go back in your timeline to see you were royal. You are also the serf. You are also the one that the Genghis Khans, when they roamed and conquered all the way to Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, you're part of the Genghis Khan fertilization zone. And National Geographic gives you a very cheap way to test your DNA to see if that's part of your progenetic capacities, you know? I mean, think about that. You don't know in your lineage until you go beyond the first two, three, or four. Beyond that story, there's a great cosmological unfolding on the planet called interconnectedness. Like, isn't that phenomenal? Like, we ought to be looking at, like, if I could be a Hitler, I could also be, who else could I be?
Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa. I could also be a Vincent van Gogh and paint sunflowers. You know, I could be Marilyn Monroe. I could be Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah. All of this potential is in the kernel of the seed that is open to by the egg, which is in the nucleus of that egg, and that nucleus contains your genetic material. Your genetic material has keys and cords and rings. And Ye Lao Tzu, he was the first one that brought through the 64 hexagrams in the teachings of the I Ching. Take a look at it, my beloved listeners. Lao Tzu brought forth the hexagram and a fundamental flaw in the ointment of family in Europe and North America. The flaw is that we are ashamed of who we are. The flaw is that we have seeded doubt through the womb in the hearts of our own children. The flaw is that we have manipulated in order to belong and abandon our soul's purpose. The flaw is that we have rejected the truth in the womb was choice. We are free to choose post-womb postpartum blues, we are free to choose by the time we're 6, 7, and 8, a whole other view of ourselves. We can break away from the context called family and reconcilate. We probably have to be 18 to 21 before we have the guts enough to do that. But I'm meeting a lot of young people who I'm meeting in my travelings who are like, I'm out of here, you know. And they're not doing a fuck you. They're saying, I'm out of here because this doesn't fit my key. It does not fit my cord. It does not fit my core resonance. It does not fit my intention. That's the plus of technology, is that these teachings are now online and we're attracting young people, very ancient young people. How does that land inside of you?
Mm-hmm. And so you were talking about your Me Toos from October, November.
Yeah. Yeah, so
we kind of went on a roundabout, but right.
Well, we did. I went through my genetic line just to give people an example of how to do shamanic tracking and to clear the ancestral wound. But my grandmother, Maria Josefina Huki, H-U-U-K-I, Hu is one of the 6 sacred seed syllables, and it's a Hu from the Ekankar teaching from Tibet. It's a way to release grief. Now, my grandmother had the key. Hugh Key, the key and the way to release grief. But because she chose to come at 18 from Finland and Hukila in northwest Finland to come to Canada to come in a lumber camp, she was one of 5 women cooking in a lumber camp of over 70 men. She met my grandfather, and he was struck by her simplicity, by her authenticity, by her beauty, her very simple beauty. And he was a poet. I mean, he loved logging, but he basically was a poet. He was absolutely naturally brilliant. And he saw her, and he was 21 and she was 18, and they had sex, and she had this very Lutheran belief, and I think it runs through a lot of families. You ought to marry the man you have sex with. If you lose your virginity to that man, you marry him, you know? I didn't doubt that. I did the same thing. My mother did the same thing. And my grandmother did the same thing. I would wager a guess that my great-grandmother did the same thing, and down the line. So it's like the right use of sexual energy is to really do an inventory of who are you dating? Who are you sitting with before you open your legs to greet a penis and root on a man and go into his lineage? You ought to have an inventory. My mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and as far as I know, back to the shaman that I am now, the reincarnation of, these women had conscious and unconscious inventories. So my grandmother had an inventory of, I need to get away from my mother in Finland because I'm really attracted to the dark, rowdy guys in the local bar. And I'm 18, and I'm feeling this sexual energy, and I'm feeling arousals, and my mother's telling me to be abstinent, to be celibate, to drink nothing, don't go to the bar, don't check that guy out. And there's 13 kids in my family. I kind of get lost in 13 kids, and my cousin and I are willing to go to Canada with $100 and a suitcase.
And go meet some loggers.
And go meet some loggers and have sex at the Pukasaw, Northern Ontario on Lake Superior. So that's a Me Too story, but I want you to hear my tonal quality. I'm not telling it from a poor me. I'm not saying poor grandma. I'm not, I've already done that. I've already done that. My dedication has been sweat. My dedication has been the Moon Lodge. My dedication is bring me the medicine so that I don't feel sorry for my grandmother. I don't want anybody to feel sorry for her or my grandfather. I want people to learn and wake up. I want people to mature in the cultivation of how these transformative points, these turning points on the timeline, can actually move through the wound and get to the treasure.
Yes. The wound, okay. The wound, can you just say that again? Because you got these turning points on the timeline.
Move through the wound. And the strategies to keep you stuck in the wound, freeze, flight, or fight, and get underneath that. Get underneath it and find the treasure. And I was given the treasures. I was given the crystal skull. I was given the teaching of the fifth generation back shaman. I have acute sensitive hearing. And my granddaughter does too. You know, we could hear birds, and we know how the bird brain works in the back of our skulls. So we get that. Mm-hmm. We can get that. And I was trusted five generations ago by my tribe migrating with the reindeer people. I was trusted to put my ear to the ground to listen to how far the herd was and how far would we have to travel before our people would have food and what season were we in, so that by August, September, we were already on the path of preparing for a long winter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. We've lost all of that. We're into chronological time. We're into manipulated time. We're into Julian time. We're into somebody out there dogmatic. Give me a teaching. Let me follow it. Put my nose to the grindstone and let me obey, because then I belong.
Give me approval. Da 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 da. So I just can't enough. You know, just from knowing the where I've been in my life and knowing where my listeners are, because they share things with me. The very, very, very important thing to get here is that, you know, not to get into that state of sorriness and stay there. It's okay if you touch on it and you go through it, but there's the treasure as you move through it, you know, that fight, flight, or freeze really can get you in our culture, our society is so stuck in that fight right now. And so, you know, I'm not saying all fighting is bad, but we're so, it's just like everywhere the message is to fight. And, you know, like, the whole point of the treasure on the other side is forgotten, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think it just gets swept away because we are so tuned into drama and drama sells. And like now news is just drama. And this is what people believe is true.
Uh-huh. Well, I think the other thing is, you know, it's the opposite of waking up. So people have taken the drug, and the drug of the culture in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The 40s, 50s, and 60s drug was, we never want to have a Hiroshima and Nagasaki again. We don't ever want to have a Hitler, a Mussolini, a Franco again. You know, so your grandparents, my grandparents, neither of my grandfathers fought in the Second World War, but my great-grandfather fought in the Finno-Russian War. So I think it's really important to understand that war can be a wake-up. It can be a wake-up to a place where my first husband's father came back from the war and said, I am going to make sure all of my children are educated, and I'm going to repopulate Canada and make sure that they never fight in a war. You know, he lived his life. Remember Wayne Dyer thing? Nine intentions. He lived his life with that intention. My mother lived her life with that intention. None of you are ever going to be like my mother, who I realized when I was nine. This is my mother talking, Helen. My mother said, when I was nine, I realized that I wanted my mother to take the four of us out of that marriage family relationship because I was tired of hearing her being raped by my father.
Wow.
And she turned to her mother at nine and said, leave him, take us with you, but get us out of here. You know, they were what she called poorest of the poor. They were living in a two-bedroom apartment in Fintown in Sault Ste. Marie, Northern Ontario. And the kids heard the raping going on at night. And they heard the stifled cries. Yeah? So
did she leave?
She left at 15 because she started bleeding. It's part of the Me Too, but I don't feel sorry for this. I want you to get the tonal quality here. This is really important. She left at 15, and that's why I am the way I am. She had the courage to start bleeding at 15. Her father, remember him, heavy metal detoxed, really psychotic, out of his body, not doing what he loved to do, doing what he thought he had or should or must do to provide for four children at that time. And he said to her, I smell your blood. I'm going to be the first man to take you.
Oh, wow.
She went into the bedroom. She was at home from school. She went into the bedroom, crawled out of the cellar window, went to the local cafe where my mumu was working, told my Momo what he had said, and my Momo said to her, "Go. Go to the east end of Sault Ste. Marie to Uncle Ailey and Auntie Norma's house, to their apartment, and they will raise you for the rest of your life. You'll be safe there." And it's true. She was given sanctuary, and she was given safety, and she was in grade 10 at Sault Ste. Marie Technical Commercial High School. She graduated from grade 11. Nobody was there at the graduation as valedictorian with a 98.7 average. Where did she put all her sexual energy? Into school.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first woman teller at the Bank of Commerce in Sault Ste. Marie. She was the first woman chairperson for the King Edward Public School Parent Teacher Association. She was the first woman president of the Northern Ontario Hospitality and Tourism Association. Where did my mother pour her intention? You see the path she made for me? Yeah. That's my me too. It just takes one person to end it. My Momo ended it by leaving Finland. My Momo ended it by saying to her daughter, her eldest, my mother, leave now. And don't look back. Don't look back. And I did the same thing. But I didn't leave. I left a societal hazardous zone, you know? Mm-hmm. I studied all of this. I went to university and studied all of it. And it was like, wow, you know, this is what sociology is. This is what anthropology is. This is what psychology is. I remember declaring I was agnostic, writing a letter back to my parents. You know, we were raised in Finnish Lutheran Church, St. Mary's Finnish Lutheran Church. And God, you know, my mother really wanted somebody in our family to be a minister. because I had a direct relationship through my Momo with Jesus. And I saw him as a tall, blonde, blue-eyed, and he kind of looked like my dad. So it was like I didn't realize till many years later that I had a genetic, unqualifiable connection to the house of Mother Mary, to the Essenes, and therefore to Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And so in the Reiki lineages, my attunement started to tap into those frequencies. And then I discovered on a shamanic journey that my grandmother, Maria Josefina, when she was baking bulu, and where she went in her flight, when her not quite checked in here, mm-hmm. she went to the garden. She went to Jesus. She went to Mother Mary.
And yeah. You said you escaped. You left. You left that construct, essentially.
I left my first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I left my first marriage. Yeah. And it's very essential. You use that word essentially. I left it because I had all the qualifications. I had all the credentials. I had done all the work in the trenches of relationship. My mother had given me an inoculation. You know, lead. I had been recognized by many men in all those three organizations, those three fields of service, including ending up as going from the local to the regional to the provincial to the national levels of leadership in my field. I had been recognized by men, but not held and acknowledged by my husband.
Mm-hmm. And I could feel that. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't bridge that gulch. Yes, I had an affair to try to find out if there was something wrong with me, and I found out there wasn't. it wasn't me. My lover, thank God, gave me that message, and he was a guidance counselor, and we acknowledged that we had family and we had children and we had to stay with our marriages. But the reality was it took my doing that and writing about that and leaving a journal on our bedroom boudoir table for my husband to read it and look at me and go, "Whoa, you actually went there." And that was his wake up.
Uh-huh.
And he realized that he hadn't been listening. He realized he had been all about himself and that, yes, he'd followed these things with me, but I was always the one initiated. I was always the one initiating. He came with me. That's codependence. And then when he read that journal, it was like, "You better wake up because I'm going to find someone else and I'm going to leave." And there was a codependent reaction. He fought it for a little bit. He kind of flew for a little bit. but there was something so deeply, profoundly frozen at the core of his being that he really couldn't get into magnanimity and generosity and really declare himself free from his inner war. He could not do that. And you know, I think he's kind of getting there now. He's a year older than me. He's 71. He'll be 72 this year. 71 this year. He'll be 72. I'm going to be 70 this year. And I see him. He's softening. Age has softened him. Diabetes has softened him. A myocardial infarction of his heart has softened him. The diseases of his second wife has softened him. Almost losing our daughter on the streets and in jail has softened him. He's softened by the success of our son in terms of our son loves salmon more than money. So he's soft. Men soften, you know. That's the, what do we do if we're coming out of a womb wound? You have to realize that men's journey in the womb wound is to go back to the mother. And they have to own that their mothers are wounded. And they have to own that because their mothers chose men who fought in a war, that their seed was wounded. And that it wasn't enough to have education. It was important to work with the wound of the relationship of the mother and father. Because you never go to bed with someone without having their mother and father with you in that bed. Yeah. Now, what does that do for you? You know, when you think about it, you're going to bed with your husband, your beautiful man, but you're going to bed with your mom and dad on one side. He's going to bed with you with his mom and dad on another side. And you've got this crazy shaman medicine right behind you. And you're going to bed with all of that. You have to reconstellate. You have to reconstruct. You have to reconfigure.
Okay, so how do you do it?
You do it by connecting to people who've already done it, i.e. Grandmother Karina, Turquoise Heart. I've already done it. I've already done it. You do it by diving into Virginia Satir's work from the Amethyst lineage. Virginia Satir, Family Reconstruction, major Bible of work in doing this work. It's a book called People Making. You do it because she did it for the United States of America. You do it because Bert Hillinger did it for Germany with Family Constellation, a beautiful book, another Bible for reconstellation. It was a very confrontative book for me because I had to look at my exit. My exit was have an affair. That was my flight because I was tired of fighting for a space where I thought I didn't belong. Yeah. And his book is Symmetry of Love. Symmetry of Love, People Making. Another beautiful book that we used in parent education by Faber and Maslich is Who Will Listen. Isn't that amazing? Who Will Listen? These are simple books, very simple. So those are the basic things that take care of the third chakra, where there's power, control, manipulation, power over by victim, power over by power over. Bullying rises out of the third chakra. The third chakra is not clear. What you're looking at is bullying. I love what Barbara Coloroso wrote. It's another one to take a look at. Her work is about ending bullying. And the first chapter of the book, I went to a workshop with her in Port Hardy last year. And the first, in the first chapter, she says, there's only two steps from bullying not so innocent bystanders to genocide. Mm. Think about that. So how often are we bystanders of bullying and we don't intervene? We don't say, this is violence. This has to stop. Yeah, think about that. And there's the bully. And we don't even ask. I mean, she and I didn't have this conversation, but we had these transmissions because I read that book from cover to cover. And she was a nun for 25 years and then married and had kids. She's feisty, feisty, feisty. And Stephen Lewis Foundation hired her to go to Rwanda to study what they did in Rwanda to bring it back to the indigenous cultures here in Canada. And so she has, you know, her epistemology, like the epistles of what she's checking into of how do we create bullies starts with statistics. And she talks about cyberbullying and quotes all of these young people, mostly young girls, who kill themselves because of cyberbullying. My inquiry is, what the hell is their family doing that those young girls are looking for some place to belong online?
Yeah, and you know, that's not that far off from my own. I mean, I wasn't cyberbullied, but I looked for a place to belong online as a young girl. And
There you talk about it. What's your Me Too?
Me too. Well, it was in the design community, actually. And I was just some I'm going to call myself a savant designer. I just made stuff up in Photoshop. This is like the 90s. I would just make up a big image and then chunk it up. My mind just worked in the way that I could turn it into a web page. And I was, you know, like 13, 14, 15 years old and put it online. And I had a much more positive experience because I did find community, because there were people in Australia who were also these sort of funky, different, avant-garde, you know, exploring the internet type designers. And I connected with them and realized, wow, this is so cool. I didn't know there was this potential, but, you know, so I guess I offer a different side of the story because it was very affirming for me, but it could have gone the other way. And I could have ended up it is such a fragile time and such a vulnerable time, and it could have ended up in the hands of manipulative, mean bullies and gone down a very different path.
Totally. And so you ask yourself, what was the turning point? So, you know, my mother could have chosen someone other than my father. You know, she was potentially raped at 15, and my mother made another decision. So what was the decision you made, Natalie, so that you made the decision you made, not the other path, the road less traveled?
Wow.
What was it? Yeah.
It's like buried deep somewhere.
That's your treasure, Natalie. Mm-hmm. That's your treasure. So I want you, beloved listeners, to hear this, that one of the pieces that I've been really riding a wave of since 2007, 2008, don't forget I had 14 years as a guidance counselor in secondary schools and did 10 years of parent education, 7 years of staff development, like three parallel realms of service. The reality is I never thought once I left all that I would ever work with kids again, like i.e. young people. 2007, I did a retreat at what's the new name of it? Campo Grand Bois, used to be the old name, Centre de Grand Cours in northwest Quebec. And I was doing a 3-month retreat, and a young woman called me up from Ottawa and said, I would like to come out and do some work with you. And I said, well, you know, bring 10 people. And she said, okay. And then she called me up the day before and said, I have 2 people. I said, the agreement was you could come for a Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, bring 10 people, we'll do Reiki training. But I need 10 people. So next day she calls Friday and she's lost. She's literally at Lost Lake. She's at Wolf Lake, actually. She's at Wolf Lake. And she says, I can't find you. And I said, how many people have you got? And she says, I've got the 2 that I told you about. And I said, I asked you to be a woman of integrity, to be impeccable, you're to bring 10 people. She said, well, no one would come but these 2 people. I said, well, you could have told me this a week ago. You know, we've been planning this. And I want you to get this. This is womb wound. This is womb wound. This is lack of intention, thinking that she's going to get away with this so that nobody is going to ask her to comply with her agreement. So she was raised by a laissez-faire father, mother, and they let her get away with it. Well, hey, end of that story. So she arrives with these 2 kids, and I directed them. And I had been working with a beautiful young Jewish boy all week for 5 days. So he joined us. So we ended up having 4 young people in front of a wood stove at a kids' camp for peace and environment. And as we're going through the Friday night, I'm looking at them, and I'm going, whoa, Spirit, you just, like, I have this altar laid out in that room. And Spirit, you've brought these kids to me, these young kids, you know, the youngest is like 19 and a 20-year-old and a 23-year-old and a, you know, 19, 20, 20, and 23. So I say, wow, you know, you brought me kids again. What am I going to do? And all I can hear Spirit saying in my heart is, work with them, work with them, work with them. So from that point on, I started realizing that young people, and I'll include you, I'll wrap you up in my bundle, young people have not been given the rites of passage to go through these puberty rites of star maiden, right use of sexual energy.
Definitely what do I we do? Haven't been. Yeah.
What do I do with my beauty? What do I do with my sexuality? What do I do with my brilliance? So you young people have been coming in and out of my field since the 70s when I first started teaching in guidance counseling. And if I look back on my professional timeline, I have had so many of you young people saying, where are my elders? That's the language that you and I would use now. Mm-hmm. But back then it would be, who is my mentor? Who is my go-to? Who can I finally trust?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
If home is not safe, if the womb is not safe, yeah, true story, Sunday night I'm working with this beautiful young woman here in Whistler, and I met her at a yoga class. Great place to pick clients up, by the way. And at the end of yoga class, she says to me, I don't know why, but I feel like I need to talk to you. And I look over her shoulder and I can see this grandmother frequency. And I say, tell me about your grandmother. And she looks at me. She says, why are you asking me about your grandmother? My grandmother. And I said, because I can see a grandmother behind you. She says, my grandmother killed herself when I was 4. She hung herself. And I said, well, there's a rope around your neck. Do you want to work with it? And she goes, are you kidding me? Of course I do. Mm-hmm. You know, she's 30 years old and she's about to go on a trip with a boy man to the Baja. I almost said, don't go. You know, I was like feeling the energy of her grandmother. And I said, okay, so do the intake. She did the intake. That was Saturday. I had a session with her Sunday. No names, but the reality is she's had over 35 different sexual partners and she's only 30 years old. What can a young woman do with the totality of creative potential if she doesn't waste all her sexual juju, her time, energy on getting a man to like her, approve of her, and maybe love her? Think about that. And her mother never believed that her stepfather physically, psychically, mentally, emotionally, and finally sexually abused her for over 8 years. She did not have a safe go-to. So when she met me, she recognized me as a safe go-to. Think about that. And that's just one little small story. I have worked now with women who, when they do the intake, Natalie, I am flummoxed because I thought, wow, you know, I've had 2 husbands and 7 lovers. I thought, oh, I was crazy. I was like, this is nothing. This is nothing. At least I chose Dharma men. At least I chose men who were educated, who had a teaching, a black belt in Taekwondo, you know. So it's like, what is this? What's going on with beauty? What's going on with women? So from 2007, 2008 onwards, I said, I have to answer the call. I would be a not so innocent bystander if I did not put myself in the firing line of say, this has to end. This cycle of abuse has to end. I need to break silence, and I need young women and young men to get online in council, in circle, do this shamanic deep-rooted work, and come back and create new sacred partnerships, holy families, and bring in the new children. And that's what they're now doing. In my 70th year, I can honestly say that those original kids from 2007, 2008 are now married, happy, bringing new children in. They're ayahuasqueros, they're carrying a boga, they're carrying peyote, they're doing the medicine path, they're doing sweat lodges, they're working with great teachers, they've got elders besides me as their grandmother. They're amazing human beings, and God damn it, I love my life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hey. Well, you know, I think, well, so if someone's listening and they're like, well, hot dang, grandma, I like to get some womb clear, and they're in luck because you're doing a retreat in Costa Rica in March and they can go check it out. So can you tell us about this retreat and how people can learn more?
Amazing. Thank you. You know what I love about us? I love how we just segue into different things.
Yeah. I love it too.
Yeah. So beloved listeners, heads up, pick up your pen and write it down. You can contact me at karina.truth, karinatruth@hotmail.com, karinatruth, T-R-U-T-H, at hotmail.com. Go to our Facebook page for venues or events, Sacred Wombs, Sacred Wounds, Sacred Women, Costa Rica.
That's, we are holding, wait, that's wound first and then womb second?
No, Sacred Wombs first.
Wombs first. Okay, thank you. Because
sacred. Second trimester is Sacred Wounds. Third trimester, labor and delivery as a sacred woman.
Okay, and we'll link to all this in the show notes too.
Perfect, perfect. And I want to offer this to you that we are co-facilitating for the last 2 years. I've been invoking and intending, thank you, Wayne Dyer, that I co-facilitate with mature people. And I've pulled up an Anamkara, a spiritual director and a spirit sister from School Without Borders. And she's a vision quester. She's worked with Abuela Andrea from Chile. She's a sacred fire keeper. She's lived on Monteverde Mountain for 15 years. She's a bioecologist. She's just finished the first semester of training as a spiritual director at a school outside San Francisco. Her name is Karen Gordon. She's a Reiki master. She has her 200-hour yoga teacher instructions, and she's worked in cranial sacral therapy as well. So yay, yay, yay. Mm-hmm. So you will be held by Karen and Karina in a very strong container at Finca Camino Nuevo, the new path. And the Maloca has been dedicated to ayahuasca. There have been very powerful Peruvian shamans who carry the mother serving there. And these two people who are now guardians and curators of venues at Finca Camino Nuevo, beautiful Kelly and Keith, are well trained in ayahuasca, and they know how to serve three organic meals. They know how to hold us in the cabinas. They know how to care for us in the dining room at the Maloca, which can seat 30 people. And they've just finished their yoga chala, so we can go on the edge of our mountain at the cloud forest and do yoga and movements and get cranial sacral Reiki treatments and just really do deep dive. So we start at noon, March the 24th. We end March the 30th. This is Semana Santos in Costa Rica. It's Holy Week. We are starting the day before Palm Sunday. And we are working through that Christology, that New Testament Christing energy, from a place of the womb and the ancient mother courts rather than the masculine crucified son courts. We're playing a different song. We are finding different rhythms and going through the wheels. So, Natalie, you're familiar with this. We will do a day and a half on the grief wheel. We will travel deeply into the elemental wheel the whole time. We are going into the transformational wheel and we'll end up with the wheel of commitment. And we will do follow-up for 2 weeks. We have room for 15 women. We will have 2 week follow-up, and we encourage women to buddy up with each other, that no one falls through the cracks. We are really intending to hold a strong web so that women will be followed up with by Karen and I and our two helpers. And I have an administrative assistant traveling with me, so I don't have to do any of that. Kylie Magami. And our two helpers are Nova Scott James from New York. She's a documentary filmmaker. She's going to do documentary goddess emergence film as part of her individual offering, so women can have an hour and a half with her and they can actually speak the way you and I are talking. Mm-hmm. And they can have their own little document.
Cool.
That says, this is what my lineage is. This is what my womb has told me. This is what my wound is. And this is why I'm here.
Wow. And cool.
Yeah, and then Ana Diorio is with us from the Landmark Education Movement, and she's a rapper, and she's going to support people finding the rap and the rhythm and the hip-hop that they can come out with their own hip-hop soul songs.
You really got it going on, Grandma.
I know.
Okay, so we'll put links to how you can learn more about that and go join that retreat in Costa Rica in the show notes. And also, if maybe you're interested, dear listener, in doing some of this womb work and womb healing, but you can't make it to Costa Rica, you can also sign up for the Co-Creavatars newsletter or e-zine. You like to call it an e-zine now, don't you?
It's really becoming that, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's essentially grandma's mailing list, but it's a collaboration of different writings from different people and different medicine stones and da-da-da-da-da, all these cool things. I say da-da-da-da-da because you just got to go in and check it out if you're interested, because we don't have time here for that today. But you can sign up for that, because then you'll find out about grandma's offerings when she's, you know, because you live for the most of the year in British Columbia and you do offerings up in that area. So if it's easier for people to get there, then perhaps they can connect with you that way as well.
Yeah. And I just want to say, Natalie, that my one-to-one women are the ones that taught me how to do this through Skype and Zoom. So if you are wherever you are in the world, we can book a time. So KarinaTruth@hotmail.com, book a one-to-one. And I want to really urge you to understand and appreciate that I will only release, like, if you've had 60, 70 different sexual partners, we only do a little bit at a time. And I make sure that you have a local support group and or someone who can contain the releasing with you in your local area. And I muscle test for everything. So only if you have certain pieces in place will I take you on online. Second thing, Natalie, we've been invited to bring this teaching to San Francisco after Spirit Weavers in June.
Cool.
We've been invited to the United Kingdom and to England to bring it to Buddha Fields, and a shamanic couple is hosting us mid-July. We've been invited to participate in the Red Tent Movement in Germany in July, and then to do a retreat, same title, only new location, a mansion in northeastern Italy in early August.
Cool. So people can find out about that on your list as well, right?
Yeah, we're just starting to articulate the teams. It's for me, for Karina, it's an end of lone wolf. I like to travel with the team. I like to have medicine people online. I am also referring, some people are asking me to travel to different places like in Connecticut, and I'm referring them to Carolyn Little in Massachusetts and other people. So if you want this work to be brought to your area, do ask. We have a team.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. And so we'll put all this in the show notes again, because this is a lot of information, but I think it's really important for it to be out there, because this is some super potent, super powerful healing. Wow. So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to share before we close up this space and send everyone off on their way?
I just want to really thank you, Natalie Ross,
with all of
my heart. You know, grandmothers and elders are created by the young. And I have been named Grandmother of the Turquoise Heart. And you have hosted me and brought pieces forward, like my wheels for Lucid Vibe Radio, that beautiful editing that your beautiful Irish young mother did for us on the three F's of the second trimester. You have done more for the bundle in the last year and a half to 2 years since we met than, well, Sonia is consistently, I have to name all our co-creators are amazing, but you have put me into another league, into another league in podcasting. And I feel like the momentum has gathered and I'm about to get real traction in podcasting, and I'm about to take a leap into a whole other realm of podcast worlds. So I couldn't have done it without you, Natalie.
I'm so grateful to hear that. And just for, you know, full disclosure and also full gratitude is, you know, behind the scenes and sometimes even on air in our shows, you can listen to the other episodes with Grandma Karina that we've done. Grandma, you have helped me heal some of the biggest wounds that I have been carrying, and it's been... I can never even express my immense gratitude for that. So I'm tearing up because I'm so grateful, because I wouldn't be as happy in my wholeness without your support. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Un abrazo. I'm holding you. Big hug.
Amazing. So let's close this space up and say our farewells.
So to the spiritual forces above, to the spiritual forces below, to the spiritual forces deep within, to the great teachings of the star nations, the galactic core, and this time of the galactic moon, the message of the hawk. Be of integrity. Be as impeccable as you can with your word. And if you are not, apologize quickly. Get back on the path. So to all the directions, guardians, and keepers, go if you must. Stay in your heart, if you will, with humor and humility. We send you back to source, to your womb, to the great womb, to the cosmic mother. You are loved. You are safe. Seek refuge. Join us in Pura Vida, Pachamama. I'm waiting. Say yes. Love you. Om Mateo.
All right, thank you, Grandma, and we'll see you soon. We'll see you back here again sometime.
I look forward to it, darling. I'll see you soon, and thank you again, lovey. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this was nourishing to you. And if you do find this nourishing, the one thing I would ask of you is to share an episode with a friend. Whether it's this episode or another episode that you have really enjoyed, the greatest thank you I can receive right now is for you to just simply share and say, hey, I think y'all would enjoy listening to this, and spread the word. And also, I also have another podcast called The Self-Care Club, in case y'all didn't know, and it's live. We have over 30 episodes over there, and we dive deeper into self-care beyond bubble baths and face masks. So Self-Care Club on any podcast app or at selfcareclub.net. Check it out. Share those with a friend as well. I'll see y'all next week with a sweet new interview featuring Elise Enzenberger of La Mystica Tarot. See you then.